Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Go. Oklahoma is a unique space in terms of the number of African-American towns that were established. Some suggest upwards of 50 African-American towns between 1924 and 1928. Reverend F.S. Jones was going around documenting this sort of self-determined, vibrant African-American communities. You see the African-American educators, doctors, lawyers, landowners, oil barons. And I think that's what's so remarkable about this footage, to think that individuals, how many years out of slavery, are now owning oil wells that are producing 2,000 barrels a day. Is that not the ultimate American dream? Is that not the ultimate American story? It flies in the face of what I think some people consider part of African American history and culture. And I think that that was one of the things that Oklahoma and what F.S. Jones is really kind of showing, is that that African American history and culture is not a monolith. And in a way, it became kind of like a marketing tool to encourage individuals to migrate, to move there, that this is a place where you can live, you can thrive, and peacefully reside. There were still palpable racial tensions. There are lynchings, there's Jim Crow segregation, there's all of these things, and you still have an African-American community, or many communities, that really speak to the fortitude and resilience of Black people in this country.
We all hear or have heard about places like Black Wall Street, which was a nickname. They also called it Little Africa. It was a nickname for Greenwood, Oklahoma, which was one of the most prosperous townships in the entire United States back in the 20s. Now, some people would say it was one of the most, or it was the most prosperous Black township, which is true. It had a number of millionaires residing in this small Black town back at a time when millionaires, period, of any race were few and far between. But what most people do not know is that even in the one state of Oklahoma, there were over 70 towns. Rosewood gets a lot of attention, but there were over 70 all-Black towns that were created, built from the ground up, governed and ran, and very successful by recently freed slaves. See, the way history is taught in America, its only intent, our primary intent, seems to be to promote white supremacy. I'm sorry, that's a fact. How else would you explain why some of the things I'm about to show you are not common knowledge? Because it's a part of American history. It's not even Black history. It's that too, but it's also American history. But yet there's a concerted effort to cause you to not know the truth, and to therefore be susceptible to believing a lot of the false narratives that falsely stereotype Black Americans in a negative light. Because you haven't been told the truth and you don't know the truth. Now, out of these 70 Black towns, there are about 13 that are still surviving today. And they're still Black. And they're still thriving. For different reasons, they may not be thriving as much as they were before, because one thing that integration has done is given Blacks more options. And a lot of Blacks have chosen to leave and to go into more segregated areas. But we still have these Black towns. And some of them were comparable to Greenwood or the Black Wall Street. And I'm going to show you that. There are a lot of negative narratives and stereotypes out there, and many of them are postulated by Black Americans themselves, particularly Black Americans who live in very dysfunctional communities. And that's one thing that I never understood, and that I really never got and still don't get, is how people can think they can formulate their worldview based upon a macro view, They're myopic. They can only see what's right in front of them or in their immediate environment, but yet they formulate a worldview based upon that. They live in a dysfunctional black community, and you will hear black people themselves, and they're all over YouTube, talking about the dysfunction of the black community. Now, in their mind, they're not talking about the black community they live in, which most often is what we would classify as a ghetto community. They're not talking about that. They're talking about the larger black community, which I say doesn't exist, because they're calling the entire black American race a community. You clearly do not know what the word community means when you make references to the black community and you're talking about the entire black race. And I don't care if the majority of black Americans at some point will refer to the black race as a community. You're wrong, all of you. You're just intellectually wrong. You know, a race does not a community make, no matter how many people say it, no matter how prominent they are, no matter who they are, no matter how often they say it. And it's important to understand this, because what happens is, this thinking is to the detriment of the black American race. Because when you look at the race as a community, invariably, even black people take the lowest common denominator and assign that and those attributes to the entire race. You take the most dysfunctional of black communities and you assign those dysfunctional attributes and qualities to the entire race. When many, in fact the majority of black Americans have absolutely nothing in common with that dysfunction or with those dysfunctional communities. The thriving and prominent black communities that really are communities, and they share commonalities, not only geographic region, they live in the same town or area or neighborhood or community, but they also share ideologies, characteristics, character, goals, everything else. But they have nothing whatsoever to do with a broken down, impoverished, gang-ridden, drug-infested, dysfunctional, predominantly single-parent household, urban, predominantly welfare recipient community that just happens to be black. You are your own community. Now, I'm not here to disrespect or downgrade those who live in those communities, even if you are part of the dysfunction. And many of you are a part of the dysfunction. You are. See, if you are dysfunctional, if your immediate family is dysfunctional, and if you have a community that consists of a bunch of dysfunctional people and dysfunctional families, you absolutely are part of the dysfunction, but there's hope for you. And let me tell you how it starts and where it starts. It starts with you coming out of denial. Coming out of denial and acknowledging the fact that, yes, I am dysfunctional. You need to be like a drug addict going through a 12-step program or an alcoholic. And the first step in the 12 steps of an alcoholic rehabilitation or drug rehab program is to admit to your dysfunction. I'm going to show you functional kids that are not ghetto, that are not crime-ridden, that are not just wallowing in poverty and misery and ignorance and lack of education. I'll say it again, there were dozens. Now, I mentioned that there were over 70 just in Oklahoma. They were in Florida, they were in all over the United States. Very prominent, thriving, and functional black communities. I'm not even saying predominantly black. I made a video showing that the most predominantly black community in the entire Southern California region was View Park, Windsor Hills, which today has a median income of over $100,000 per year, which is far more than most communities of any race in the entire United States, and it is the most predominantly black community in the entire Southern California region. But by being predominantly black, it's only about 87% black. But when I talk about the black community from back in the recently, one generation from slavery, less than a generation from slavery, back in the 1910s, 20s, 30s, and some of them are still thriving today, they were not predominantly black, but totally black, exclusively black. If there were any white people around at all, they were so few as to not even be able to register when you start looking at percentages. Less than 1%. Black ran, black governed, black ruled, and they had any and everything any other town would have. Electricity, water system, transportation, barbershops, hospitals, libraries, law offices, anything you would need in a town for it to function. Anything. You had your craftsmen, you had your technicians, you had your construction company, you had anything any other town would have. And black people who had been recently slaves, living slaves, ex-slaves, built this. Now, I'm a man of truth and honesty, and I deal with facts. I don't deal with emotion, because facts do not care about your emotion or how the facts make you feel. Now, a lot of us as black Americans, we are intellectually dishonest, and we hate any type of criticism, no matter how constructive that criticism might be. Oh, we shout and cheer when we are praised or we hear something positive about ourselves.
In order for you and me to devise some kind of method or strategy to offset some of the events or repetition of the events that have taken place here in Los Angeles recently, we have to go to the root. We have to go to the cause. Dealing with the condition itself is not enough. And it is because of our effort toward getting straight to the root that people oftentimes think we are dealing in hate. We are oppressed. We are exploited. We are downtrodden. We are denied not only civil rights, but even human rights. So the only way we're going to get some of this oppression and exploitation away from us or aside from us is come together against a common enemy. Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate, you should ask yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you? And I, for one, as a Muslim, believe that the white man is intelligent enough. If he were made to realize how black people really feel and how fed up we are without that old compromising sweet talk. Stop sweet talking it. Tell him how you feel. Tell him how, what kind of hell you've been catching, and let him know that if he's not ready to clean his house up, if he's not ready to clean his house up, he shouldn't have a house. It should catch on fire and burn down.
Black man in America for the past 400 years has been like a boy in the white man's house, begging the white man for a job, for food, clothing, and shelter. And then after the white man provides him with all of these things, he turns around and has the nerve to get angry at the white man when the white man tries to control his life. How can people, a group of people such as our people, who own no factories, have equal job opportunities competing against a race that owns the factories? The only way the two can have equal job opportunities is if black people have factories as well as white people have factories. And then we can employ whites or we can employ blacks, just like they can employ whites or they can employ blacks. But as long as the factories are in the hands of the whites, the housing is in the hands of the whites, the school system is in the hands of the whites, you have a situation where the blacks are constantly begging the whites, can they use this or can they use that? That's not any kind of equality of opportunity, nor does it lend toward one's dignity. What does a black man look like begging for a cup of coffee in a white restaurant and doesn't have a job to back up his, to pay for it when he does get the coffee? It's putting the cart before the horse. Instead of the Negro leaders having the black man begging for a chance to dine in white restaurants, the Negro leader should be showing the black man how to do something to strengthen his own economy, to give himself an independent economy, or to provide job opportunities for himself. Not begging for a cup of coffee in a white man's restaurant. Number one, he must have a knowledge of himself, and this gives him confidence in himself. He has been brainwashed by the educational system that exists here in America to the point where he feels he was a savage in the jungle when he was before he was brought here, and this destroys his morale. So the number one thing that has to be done, he has to be retaught, be given, he has to be re-educated and made to know that he's a man like anyone else, and then he can stand on his own two feet like others. Then if the black man, the black leadership, who has access to all of this money and has all of these degrees today, can't use his talent and his know-how to set up business opportunities, job opportunities, housing opportunities for the black people, the same as the white leaders have done for white people, then these black leaders need to get off the boat. They're not leading our people toward any kind of independence, but they're using their positions and their education and their talent to exploit our people worse than the slave master did during slavery.
If white immigrants can come to this country 50 years ago with nickels and dimes and no education, and come here and pool their little nickels and dimes and no education, and set up little stores, develop these stores into larger stores, develop this into an industry which creates job opportunities for whites. Since Lincoln was supposed to have freed the black man 100 years ago, and today the black man, according to the government economist, has spending power of $20 billion per year. We feel that with the black man spending $20 billion a year, not setting up any businesses, not creating any industry, not creating any job opportunities for his own kind, he's not in a moral position to point the finger today at the white man and tell the white man that he's discriminating against him for not giving him a job in factories that he himself set up. If the black man has $20 billion, and these so-called Negro leaders are such geniuses that they can integrate white restaurants and integrate white factories and integrate, force themselves into that which the white man has set up, they should use this same ingenuity to show the black people how to pool our wealth and set up something of our own. And then we won't have to force our way into it.
We should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a black store in a white community. White man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And you who don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. We have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out. And you and I are in a double trap, because not only do we lose by taking our money someplace else and spending it, when we try and spend it in our own community, we're trapped because we haven't had sense enough to set up stores and control the businesses of our community. The man who's controlling the stores in our community is a man who doesn't look like we do. He's a man who doesn't even live in the community. So you and I, even when we try and spend our money in the block where we live or the area where we live, we're spending it with a man who, when the sun goes down, takes that basket full of money in another part of the town. So we're trapped. Trapped. Double trapped. Triple trapped. Anywhere we go, we find that we're trapped. And every kind of solution that someone comes up with is just another trap. Those, our people, the importance of setting up these little stores and developing them and expanding them into larger operations. Woolworth didn't start out big like they are today. They started out with a dime store and expanded and expanded and expanded until today they're all over the country and all over the world and they're getting some of everybody's money. Now this, what you and I and General Motors, the same way, didn't start out like it is. It started out just a little rat race type operation. And it expanded and expanded until today is where it is right now. And you and I have to make a start. And the best place to start is right in the community where we live. So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community. And once you can create some employment in the community where you live, it will eliminate the necessity of you and me having to act ignorantly and disgracefully boycotting and picketing some cracker someplace else trying to dig in for a job. Anytime you have to rely upon your enemy for a job, you're in bad shape.
Today's It's My House is titled Black Wall Street Greenwood versus the other 600 plus Black Wall Streets. You know, the last audio I played, I got a question asking you guys. Maybe you know. I'm wondering if Malcolm X and Martin Luther King if they knew about the number of black townships in the United States. Matter of fact, hold, let me, I'm going to play a little bit, repeat of the last audio of Malcolm, this in the proper context.
Black man in America for the past 400 years has been like a boy in the white man's house, begging the white man for a job, for food, clothing, and shelter. And then after the white man provides him with all of these things, he turns around and has the nerve to get angry at the white man when the white man tries to control his life. How can people, a group of people such as our people, who own no factories, have equal job opportunities competing against a race that owns the factories? The only way the two can have equal job opportunities is if black people have factories as well as white people have factories. And then we can employ whites or we can employ blacks, just like they can employ whites or they can employ blacks. But as long as the factories are in the hands of the whites, the housing is in the hands of the whites, the school system is in the hands of the whites, you have...
Now... There's yesterday or the day before yesterday, we had a guest on. The state of Texas alone had over 500 black communities. Some set up as towns. The settlements can come in different forms, towns. But over 500 in Texas alone. Oklahoma over 50 alone. I mean, that's like over 550, 600 between two states, Oklahoma and Texas alone. Then you had at least two in Mississippi that I know about. Two here in Florida, and Rosewood was not one of them. But Fort Mose, which basically disappeared due to the rising tide. But Eatonville, Florida, which is 6 miles outside of Orlando, that town's over 100 years old. It's still here. In Illinois, you have New Philadelphia, Illinois, which is a ghost town now, but New Philadelphia, Illinois, Brooklyn, Illinois, which is still around, Hopkins Park, Illinois, which is still around. Lakeview, Illinois. Now, there's two Lakeview, Illinois, but the one I'm talking about is a historic black township going back to the, Underground Railroad. Highland Beach, Maryland. North Brentwood, Maryland, which is right outside of D.C. Fairmont Heights, Maryland, which is right outside of D.C. I think Glen Arden, Maryland, which is in the suburbs. So there's a number of them, including black townships in all over the place, man. Michigan, in the Carolinas, there's a number of them. So my question is, at least one question, is that when Malcolm X made those statements, did he know about these black townships? I mean, it's a prolific number here. Well, maybe not prolific in the scheme. There are over 19,000 towns in the United States. But that includes everybody. But there were quite, I mean, I've never heard of, in any speech of Martin Luther King, and I haven't heard all his speeches, but I'm just wondering, why didn't King and X say, look, these towns, I mean, here are great. There's no shortages of them, even today, that, you know what, even with Black Wall Street, Greenwood, because there were several Black Wall Streets, even with Black Wall Street, I mean, you got a blueprint. I think the best civil rights move would have been, you know what, Don't ask the government for a penny. We got a blueprint here, actually several blueprints. Because you have the urbanized blueprint, which is Black Wall Street, Greenwood District. That's an urban blueprint of blacks putting their own community together. And then you have the rural blueprint, which the vast majority of them are rural blueprints. In any event, let's go to the phone lines here. 410, your mic is open.
All right, all right. Hotep, brother, and all of the rest of the brothers and sisters out there in Radio Land. How you doing this morning?
I can't complain. Anyway, can you possibly answer that question? I don't know. I know Malcolm X was a well-read person. And the Nation of Islam under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he had dairy farms, trucking systems. But Malcolm X, he was putting it out there, but there were already several people already have done what he would suggest that black folk do. But there was an information gap, though, because the majority of black folk did not know about these, to my knowledge, successful black towns. Anyway, your comments on that.
Or did they know?
I don't think they knew.
Look, let me give you this. And my what I'm about to give is an isolated case.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a young man, we were talking about discrimination and integration. And a gentleman that lived in our community was a professional gambling hustler. And he heard us. He said, look, he said, black folks got everything they need right now. He said, I travel all over this country gambling. That's how I make my living, and hustling. And he said, whenever I get off a train or I get off the bus, the first thing I want to know is where's the black community? He said, because I'm home there because I know whatever I need, I can get it there. I can get anything I need in any town that I go in across the United States. And he said, I just about been to every last one of them. He said, we got our own stuff. We don't need to integrate with them. Now, that was an isolated case. But mm-hmm. Now, if you listen carefully to Martin Luther King's last speech, where he would talk about he's been to the mountaintop.
Right.
A lot of people don't listen to that complete speech. But if you listen to it, he knew you're talking about now. Malcolm X knew what we're talking about now. Because, look, when Martin Luther King had that march in Illinois and, he took a beating there, he visited the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he talked. And after they had that talk, Martin Luther King came out with that famous speech that he had led his people into a burning house. So the thing is, he found out that he was going in the wrong direction. And that last speech, if you listen to it carefully, a lot of people, in fact, all they give you is I've been to the mountaintop. And the rest of it they cut off. But the second part, he talks about, hey, look, we need to go ahead on and have our own stuff. And he cited what Malcolm X stated about we have a $20 million economy, and it's bigger than Canada. And we need to go in and we need to do our own thing. I'm paraphrasing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is Malcolm X, a lot of people, I'm just finding this out myself, and Martin Luther King met after he split from the Nation of Islam. and they got together and they talked. But see, there's one thing that we don't realize, Brother L.A., and, you know, that's why I have a problem with these black conservatives and these black liberals. We don't realize, and we don't have a knowledge of history, and we don't go back and look at these things with an open mind. We can't analyze stuff because, see, all we do is regurgitate what a white ventriloquist put in our heads and talk through our mouth. They have started to form all of this stuff. And the white man in advance knew, hey, look, if these two get together, we're in trouble. This integration thing ain't going to work. Because already Martin Luther King is talking about we need to spread the pain here. We need to do our own thing, start putting our money in our own institutions. And Malcolm X had been preaching this thing for I don't know how many times based on what he knew about the taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So if you go and approach these things and look at them and analyze them carefully, yeah, they knew about this. They knew about how much money we were spending. And they knew that, hey, look, we had an economy back then bigger than Canada, than some of the European countries. So they knew this. So, I mean, don't get this thing about, hey, look, if they knew, they did know, but they didn't have a chance to go in and really focus on this thing and get our people led in the right direction. You know, if there's one thing you can give this boy, this white boy, see, he doesn't live for the moment. He lives 50 and 100 years in advance to make sure that this supremacy and this domination is safe. See, that's where we make our mistakes. And the thing is, I sent you that list of black Wall Streets that was in existence way before these Chinatowns and Little Italy's and Little Havanas and all of this other stuff. But what happened is, because you don't have a knowledge of your history, and like Malcolm X says, you have this self-hatred. See, you destroy everything that you have because you feel like you're not good enough, and whatever you have ain't good enough, so you won't build on it because you don't have a sense of identity. I tell you that all the time. When you listen to these black conservatives talk and these black liberals talk, If you have the insight that I have, you can see every last thing that they do is self-hatred. All they're preaching is self-hatred, and what they're doing is crippling our people. Because, like you said before, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was preaching this self-hate, do for self, you don't need them. Booker T. Washington was preaching, hey, let them have their own politics and everything. Let's create our own stuff. The thing is, when you don't have a sense of identity and you have this self-hatred pumped into you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by the white boy, those messages bounce off you just like water does off a back. And that's what's happening. Because when you look at that list that I sent you of these black Wall Streets, in these, well, black business districts.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you say is, well, hey, wait a minute. We had all of this stuff. What happened to it? And if you read the article that preceded that list, what happened is you had the white race rise. Hey, whenever they saw a black town like Tulsa succeeding and doing great and they saw that we didn't need them and we didn't have to go to them for anything, their newspapers started spreading that propaganda out, trying to go ahead on them and ferment and try and, you know, brew up enough white hatred where they could go in there and burn that town down. See, before that black guy was accused of messing with that white girl, what happened is the white newspapers had been brewing up this hatred for years because they looked over there and saw how good these black folks were doing. And the first thing they were saying, hey, why come they're doing so great and we ain't doing so great? So jealousy set in, racism set in, and the first opportunity they had to tear that town down, they took advantage of it. And the same thing happened in Wilmington, North Carolina. Same thing. You know, the white newspapers and the media. I'm going to say the media because the media does that today. They went in, and wherever you see downtown Wilmington is, if you ever visit that town, that city, see, blacks controlled all of that. They controlled the politics, and they controlled the economics, and they controlled the docks. And they got together and bought those trucks in there from other places to burn that place down. In fact, they said the Cape Fear River was a river of blood, where they were killing black folks and throwing them overboard. And the thing is, they say you could see blood flowing down that river. So, yeah, they knew about it. But the thing is, also, you had a bunch of, back then, so-called black conservatives and black liberals back then that wanted to be part of the white boys stuff. They was preaching against Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. I mean, if you go back as far as I do, you had a whole lot of black folks that hated Martin Luther King. And he was a nonviolent preacher, preaching you love your neighbor, you know, don't fight back. They hated Martin Luther King at the beginning, worse than they hated Malcolm X. But Malcolm X bailed him out because he was preaching, hey, you got to defend yourself. So, I mean, all we got to do is just go back in history and see all of this stuff, Brother L.A. And we got it today. It's even worse today. Because, see, we have bought into this crazy. So, I mean, yeah, they knew about it.
I won't be able to play it today because it's too long. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, the full speech is...
About
47
minutes long,
isn't it? Yeah, it's over 40 minutes long. So yep. that would eat yep. up. I'll play it maybe next week to start off the program. You know, my mother, I remember when, because that speech was released on albums or LPs, as you might call them. My mother
yes,
bought
it was.
That.
We had it in ours.
And the only thing I can remember from that, and you're right, they hyped that up. See, to this day, I've been to the mountaintop. I might not get there with you. That's the only part of the speech I remember.
Yeah, because that's the only part they give you, you know.
Right, you're right. That's the part of the speech that they play all the time. Out of a 40-something minute speech.
Well, now you know what they could cut and dice it all they want to, but see that last part doesn't serve their purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, the whole thing about white media and white entertainment, movies and television shows, is to make sure that they go in and keep us blind. What is it, deaf, blind, and deaf, dumb, and blind,
mm-hmm.
and rap music, you know. But Martin Luther King was very, very explicit in what he was saying, and he criticized the Negro preachers of that day. I mean, when you listen to it, in fact, you can run it down to the part where he gets into that, and, you know, it's not that long, but that's what killed him. Now, they tell you that his speech at the Riverside Church got him killed. No, it was that part of the Memphis speech that got him killed. Because they say, hey, look, if this nigga is nonviolent with the following that he has, embrace this self-help, do-for-self stuff, then this integration ain't gonna work. And look, I can send you a Bobby Hemmett take that shows you that they said, hey, look, you know what? If we don't do something to stop these Negroes, then they're going to create an economic system that we won't be able to control. They'll take over the whole thing here. And I've sent you links of the Economic Cooperation Amongst the Negroes by W.E.B. Du Bois, where he said that black folks didn't have to go to white folks for anything, right out of slavery. So, I mean, because we don't seek knowledge, and when we do seek knowledge, we've been so brainwashed that we have bought into this white propaganda foolishness. That's why come we can't get ahead. You know, I mean, the evidence is there. But if you have a people that have a self-hatred, like he said earlier, and then you have these sellout colored folk, like the black conservatives and the black liberals, then we're doomed to, in fact, we're headed for extinction right now.
You think it's self-hatred or lack of information? I'll give you an example using myself. I'll give you an example using myself. 10 years ago, I've been doing this in my house 7 years. So 10 years ago, I didn't realize. Now, I had set foot in Highland Beach, Maryland, at least twice. But I didn't know the history of Highland Beach, Maryland. And then there's another place. I went to another it's a black township. I went in like right after high school, but I didn't realize it was. I didn't realize the significance of a black township until 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So my question is: do you think the problem is it self-hate, or we had like I grew up in D.C. I didn't realize Fairmount Heights was a black township. Northwood, Brentwood, Maryland, which is about ten minutes from my house in D.C. Didn't realize that was a black township. 8th Street Northeast used to, you can sort of say that was a sort of a black Wall Street for D.C. 14th Street Northwest, black Wall Street for D.C. A good stretch of George Avenue, a lot of black businesses there. Kennedy Street Northwest. I guess you can look at it as sort of a black Wall Street in D.C. And then, now you might know this more than I do, the Florida Avenue Market. I think you told me they changed their name. Who had that before the Asians got in there strong?
I don't know. When I got there, the Asians had it. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I know their customer base is black, though.
Yeah. Are you familiar with what is it, U Street or U Avenue, ever what it is?
Yeah, U Street North, yeah, over there by Ben's Chili Bowl, 14th and UNA. Yeah, well, that's all been gentrified now in D.C.
Right, but that used to be a black business section up in
there,
too.
That used to be a strong black business district.
Yeah. And look, while my mind is on it, you know, Pennsylvania Avenue was there in Baltimore. And
over there,
what was it?
I know you talked. Man, what was that club? I think I heard they closed it down, or it went out of business. The Sphinx Club.
I'm not familiar with that.
That's on Pennsylvania Avenue, isn't it?
Yeah, but they used to have the Royal Theater down in there too. You know.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Was it the Royal Theater where all the stars used to go up in Pennsylvania Avenue?
Man, I don't know. When I discovered it, you can tell that once it was probably a grand place, and it's still a little major thoroughfare in the black community in Baltimore. At least, I haven't been up there in a while. But And I know they had, Baltimore's got churches all over the place.
Well, let me give you this. Did you know that there were 35 black townships in Maryland?
I didn't know it was that high.
Yeah, and Townsend, Maryland was an all-black township until the white folks went in there and ran them out of there and took it over. In fact, I don't know what I did with that book, but it was a black historian that has written two books. And I bought a map from him showing all of those black towns.
Maybe about 2 years ago, three at the most, that I basically named everyone I knew about, and there was one I left out, which I think was called Sugarland up there in Montgomery County, Poolsville, but I didn't realize there was 35 of them. But you know what? That's believable, because there's quite a few few pockets of black folks up there in the state of Maryland.
If you look at that map, you can see how that how they played a part in the Underground Railroad, because all you had to do was reach one of those towns and you could safely navigate your way to the Mason-Dixon line and on across.
Mm-hmm.
But all I'm saying is this here, Brother Elliot, look. It's not too – look, if you listen to Malcolm X speeches, Martin Luther King speeches, after he got enlightened, the same problems that we had back then, we had today. We haven't moved. You know, and the thing is, I heard this guy talk about benign neglect. That's a thing that you really need to look into. I'll send it to you, how they purposely got together and say, you know what, we got to fix this thing where we don't attend to Negro affairs. We just act like they don't exist, and that's what's happening. And the other thing, too, is this. When you have us being pumped with this foolishness about trying to get into what the white man is doing and not developing our own, I mean, it's a remedy. It's a road to failure and extinction. That's what it is. And because we got the money, and that last part of that video where Malcolm X was talking about pooling your money together. Now, there was some distortion in that other part where he was talking about immigrants can put their nickels and dimes together. It was you had some interference where people couldn't understand it, but that was the most important part of the speech. But the thing is, that last part, it shows that we're spending something like $1.3 trillion a year. And that's enough to create I don't know how many jobs. And to make sure that in every town we have it. Because, look, I can send you the 2000 census. I haven't gotten the latest one. There's a whole bunch of cities right now where blacks are the majorities in these towns and cities.
No, that's true.
I mean, there's a bunch of them. So with that being the case, why shouldn't, in fact, some of them are even 95% black. They go up that high. And some of the, I did a little presentation there in Baltimore when I was trying to get these guys to see some things that we could do. Out of, I think there's about 13 or 14 or 15 zip codes in that city. And out of all of them, I think there was only one or two zip codes that was predominantly white or had a majority of whites.
You talking about Baltimore City?
Baltimore City. Baltimore City really is.
Yeah, well, I think Baltimore is like 55% black, and then, well, at least I haven't checked in a while. But, well, if you know where to go on the west side and the east side, there are zip codes that are practically all black.
Exactly. Exactly. And where I lived on the northeast side, the majority of it was black.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I come out open that store up in that area, you know, because the thing is, there was a clientele there. I'd done the research. I did a current market assessment of the area. And the only reason I got there was because, you know, I was looking for a place to set up. But in Baltimore, those zip codes are really actually little towns within that larger city.
I'm glad you framed it that way, because essentially, all a city is really a collection of communities and or, if you want to frame it that way, towns or villages is the best way to put it. That's all really a city is.
And the zip code.
And Baltimore is a good example of that, because I mean you got Little Italy. I mean that's his own thing. Up there in Baltimore. Then they got other parts of Baltimore, because Baltimore, as you know, is very ethnic. And different parts, though.
Well, all cities are really, but, you know.
Well,
look,
yeah,
in fact, in D.C., there's a whole bunch of zip codes in there that is majority black. In fact, I laid it out to them when I did that presentation, and they wasn't even aware that, hey, wait a minute, you know, if all of us are in here with all of this going on, and look, the census gave how much money was being earned in those zip codes, and I pointed that out to them, too. But
I'm looking at some stats here, Beasley. We're going to get ready to go to another call here real quick. I'm going to leave your mic open. Gary, Indiana is 80% black. Chester, Pennsylvania, 77% black. Miami Gardens, Florida, 76% black. Orangeburg, South Carolina, 75% black. Birmingham, Alabama, 73% black. Albany, Georgia, 71% black. Baltimore, Maryland, oh, I thought it was 55% black. It's actually 63.7% black. Memphis, Tennessee, 62% black. New Orleans, 60% black. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 58% black. Wilmington, Delaware, I did not know it was 58% black. Flint, Michigan, I've been there a few times, 56% black. Savannah, Georgia, 55% black. But like I say, the real high numbers, Detroit is 82, and Detroit used to be higher than 82%, but it's 82.7% black right now. Let's see, they don't have, that's the top 20. So there's, these are Charlotte, North Carolina. They don't get a percentage. Over 800,000 black people in Charlotte.
Yeah. But they don't have the percentages that these other cities have.
No, they don't.
In fact, while you're talking, I'm going to send you a list of all of these predominantly black cities in the United States. I'm going to text it to you. And the thing is, it goes state by state, just to give you an idea of what you're dealing with here. Now, this is a 2000 census. Listen, it's been increased or decreased since then, but I just sent it to you. But you know what? When you don't have a sense of identity, you don't know what the hell you got. And you don't know, and that sense of identity, if you don't have pride in your race, then you don't take advantage of what you got. And see, that's our problem. See, we have bought into this thing. You know, Sekou Touré said, I'd rather live in poverty than to live as a slave in opulence. He told De Gaulle that, and that's what we bought into. See, we have bought into, hey, look, you know, I can work for the white boy and make $100,000 a year instead of going ahead on and developing our own stuff, like Malcolm X says, and create jobs where a whole bunch of black folks can make $100,000 a year. But I just sent you that text that shows you all the majority of towns and cities in these states.
All right, let's go to the next caller here. Let me see. 314, area code, your mic is open.
The only thing I can see is ha, ha, ha.
In reference to, specifically.
How many people do one supermarket provide food for?
Oh, man, I can't even answer that question.
So you got one person that's going to make the money, and you got the other people going to come spend money with them.
Right.
How many? You got people that's making money working for companies, white or whoever, most of them white. Those STEM graduates are working for basically white companies. Well, they got salary, they got benefits, and pensions. retirement, medical plans. So you're saying that they should quit? Some people, I hear some people say that black kids shouldn't work for no white companies. Like a damn fool. So you're saying that they're going to degress their position 50 damn years or more, 100 years, and realign themselves in order to make a few blacks rich. Because there ain't no black company. There are some. As a matter of fact, there's quite a few. But look at this pretense. They're going to quit where they are and go someplace else where they're not really in demand and doing the same thing what they're doing now.
Well, the majority of black folk, for the sake of this conversation, that, and we all know them, you know, they're going to, particularly if they have advanced degrees or what have you, they're going to go to work for, like anybody else, they're going to go to the company that will more than likely pay them more money, have better benefits, you know, that type thing. That's just...
Well, that's what I'm telling you.
That's a no-brainer.
What black companies...
The exception
see, the
would
people
be...
That...
Hold on, Pianchi. The exception would be if... Now, I'll pick a good example here. Black Enterprise Magazine. Okay. Black Enterprise Magazine, the late Earl Graves, he and his wife started that. And when his kids were entering into college... Essentially, at that point, Black Enterprise was essentially a family business, which was basically institutionalized by that point. So his kids, at least one of them now, runs the company. I don't know about he had three sons.
Yeah, but that's one family, L.A. How many Black Enterprise magazines do you need?
That's one family.
Huh?
That's one family. You're right. The majority
so
of
if
people,
all blacks start buying his magazine, it's going to make who rich? Him.
Oh, it's going to make him rich.
See, you got people talking. What they're trying to do is realign and redirect stuff to themselves. Mm-hmm. The same thing these groups, these spokespersons for these groups do, whether it's Malcolm X or Martin Luther King, whether it's T.D. Jakes, whether it's any of them. They're trying to redirect, take from where it is and bring to them. That's what they're trying to do.
And you know what? Every person that you just named, Pianchi, T.D. Jakes with the Partners House, family-based business. Elijah Muhammad, at least when he was living, I don't know how they have it structured now in the Farrakhan, family-based business.
Farrakhan is too.
Well, yeah, the way he's got
Elijah Muhammad had 250,000, quote, reportedly 250,000 membership. Why come he didn't do this? You know why come blacks don't do what Bleezy is talking about? The simple reason is this. They don't want to. Another point. You made mention about Martin Luther King's speeches. And somebody say, you only hear what they want you. You only hear what they want you to hear. Who is this they?
Well, Beasley. That's
there's nobody stopping. I don't know who this they is that's, that only want you to. But I don't see how a day that don't want you to is actually stopping you from. There's nobody stopping you from playing Martin Luther King's speeches and putting them in the proper format and text where you can. Somebody, I listened to a person talking that same crap about education. They dummy down the curriculum. I asked them, who is this damn day? Then I told him, I said, here's the law in the state, now I'm talking about the state of Missouri, where it says that that's your responsibility. It's the same thing like this critical race theory. Some idiots done came up with this mess. Now they want to give it to whites to teach it to their children. What fools is going to teach their children out of their social status in the world? That don't make no damn sense. the most preferred employers that were listed, or should I say given, because there was a survey amongst the graduates. Inez being 2017, number one Google, two Apple, three Boeing, three General Electric, five NASA. You know how many blacks NASA hire now?
How many?
ExxonMobil, seven Lockheed, eight Amazon, nine Microsoft, 10 Chevron, 11 IBM, Intel, Johnson & Johnson, General Motors, Nike, 15, Shell, Dow, Ford, 3M, Disney Parks and Resorts, BP, 22, Northrop Grumman, 23. I've seen Northrop Grumman hire 2 years in a row over 400 STEM graduates that was black. What Negro organization is they going to do that stuff?
Guess who's also on here, LA?
You got Central Intelligence Agency. You got Federal Bureau of Investigation, Goldman Sachs. As I said before, these are people are United States citizens. They consider themselves Americans, and they're working to make America strong. That's why America leads the world. And it's because of you got this dumbness that's been going on here in our lifetimes that we can see is starting to slip. And that's terrible. Heck, when you got high schools in the hood that's got a graduation rate of 70% in 2021, you got 5% of the students in a high school from 9 to 12 that's proficient in math. One popularly known for its football program, it's got less than 1% in math, 3% in reading. So if you had a black corporation, you going to hire from them? I'm asking you, would you hire from them?
Let me answer his question.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to him. I didn't say nothing while you was talking.
No, go
normally
ahead.
High school, 97%, normally high school, 97% black. Graduation is 70-74%. This is a high school that's got everything on it. Because I built one of the schools in that district. Math proficiency, 5. Reading, 10-14%. Hazelwood East, which is out in the suburbs. Blacks are leaving the city, going to the suburbs. And I ain't saying this is the kids' fault. We know whose fault it is. Graduation rate, 77%. Math proficiency, 17%. Reading proficiency, 35%. You can't. Now, so who are you going to hire for? And you know another thing, too, I was going to talk about Black Wall Street, Tulsa. Mm-hmm. Were those all black Americans? Or was they Muscovy Creek?
Good question. That's Muscogee territory out that way.
Muscovy Creek is a separate nation. In 1832, they had to sign a treaty because they lost the war, which is typical. You lose the war, person that beat you, you got to come to the table. And they're going to put some stipulations out there that you're going to have to agree to, or you're going to continue your fight. And they probably decimate you. And five civilized tribes, they all had slaves. In some cases, a female out of those tribes made it with a black African. For whatever reason, they ain't got to that yet. And you know, in 1979, the Creek Tribal voted the blacks out. This is 1979, they done that. Oklahoma became a state, and I can't think, I think it was, what year was that?
I have to look it up.
I think it was 1906. I'm not sure. The massacre occurred in
1921. Right.
When did it become a state? Well, before it was a state, it was Oklahoma Territory.
Yeah, it was Oklahoma
and that
Territory,
was,
which was primarily
and that was
Indian
the,
territory.
Right. That was Indian. That was the land of the Creek, because they was made to go up there in the moving out. They also signed a treaty in 1866 that moved them further. But anyway, is it? Are we not sure that it wasn't the Creek that done this and owned those, a lot of those businesses?
That's a very good question, Pianchi. Very good question.
You know, the thing is that gets you wondering. And I'm not taking anything from anybody. I just want the people not to
over-exaggerate. November 16th, 1907, that's when Oklahoma became a state.
All right, so 14 years later, they had this bill, a bill in Stonehenge.
Right.
All that wasn't built in no 14 years. Because I know of stories of some artisans, which was black, came out of the Chicago area, where everything was built up and helped build some of those story buildings that was in that town. Now I'm talking about stories, brick buildings. Now, all the main business, or should I say the GDP in that area was two things, agriculture and oil.
Correct.
You talked about Jake Simmons.
Yeah, Joseph Jake Simmons. You know all about him. Yeah.
Yeah, Jake Simmons is dark as Wesley Snipes, I guess you can say, or anybody else. But Jake Simmons was not a black American. He was a Mokovi Greek Indian. Look at his wife in the book. His wife is even one. She's a beautiful woman too.
And so was
now,
Clara
I'm not
Rector.
Taking anything. You're absolutely right. Clara Rector was. Matter of fact, you can go there today. You can still
Creek.
See her property.
She was Muskogee. She was Creek Indian, just like you said. Very,
right,
very
the NAACP came and got her. They came and got her and took her. I think they took her back to Chicago, drew up a phony birth certificate and listed her as being white.
That's true.
For whatever the reason was.
Which
did
is
you
crazy.
Ever hear about that story?
Yeah, I read about that at least two or three times, yeah. As dark as she
right.
was, but she was
That really don't count, because I've seen people as dark as Isaac Hayes that's classified as white. But, you know, that's a whole nother story. So I'm just saying
you bring
this
up a very
that,
good point. I never thought about you mentioned it. And I'm going to see if I can get somebody, Laurel Stratford. But you're right. How many of those businesses were Nick Creek Indians? Who were in skin tone black? That skin tone.
Yeah,
they
still
identified
as
black. But
well, they were then because they had mixed. I mean, made it with them Africans.
Right.
And then in 1979, that group kicked them out. Here's another thing too: the United States government paid the Creek for their slaves. They paid the Creek. They paid a couple other nations to release their slaves.
Well, wasn't that how a lot of them, probably about 100, like somebody like Sarah Rector became wealthy because she got like anywhere from 80 to 160 acres worth of land, oil happened to be on it. Wasn't that how that happened in the first place?
She had oil on her land. I think she had about 32 pumps. And each pump has got her name on it and the name
right.
of in numerical order. So I never have studied her. Okay. But she would deserve to be studied. Need to find out who these people are. And I'm not taking anything from anybody, but today, you know, black folks today would claim anything black that ain't lily white. And that is absolutely wrong. You're taking away from these people. And they probably don't want to argue with you for a whole bunch of reasons. But when you look at some other tribes at the end, and you know, when Lincoln's done his Emancipation Proclamation, saying that the former, that slaves was free, well, that just was not true. And you know the reason why it wasn't true. Because he didn't have no control over those nations. Those nations, as listed in the Constitution, were sovereign nations. He couldn't tell them to do jack. That's why I come
on
the government came.
I'm
going
to do some research starting this weekend because you done got me thinking. Because I've been out in that neck of the woods several times, and Muscogee Creek, they got a lockdown out there.
Oh, absolutely, dude. I'm going to send you some more stuff on them, too. They got Muscogee Creek all over
and
the world. You got Muscogee Creek, Germany.
The guy who founded or put together or developed, rather, the Green, as we call Black Wall Street, he was an outsider.
You mean the celebration last week?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about O.W. Gurley. He's dead now. The guy who, you know, in 1905, I'm reading about him right now. In 1905, O.W. Gurley sold his store and land, and he was in another state, and he moved his wife, Emma, to the boom town of Tulsa, Oklahoma, where he purchased 40 acres of land, which was only to be sold to, as they put in here, colored. The first law passed in the new state of Oklahoma 33 days after state, but I don't.
What did he purchase the land?
He purchased. They don't say here who he purchased it from.
You don't purchase them each those Indian land. You can lease it. A member can lease however much he wants. It's not for purchase. That's another thing too.
That's a good
if
point
you was a Creek up. Indian, if you was a Creek Indian, and an Indian is a legal term meaning that you are a member of a tribe. That's what it means.
Right.
Now it has been plagiarized to what we think it is today. If you was a Creek Indian, okay, and you own land and slaves, your assets could only be figured with your slaves because the land belonged to the tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
It don't belong to the individual. So he didn't – it's same – you know what? The funny thing about it, it's the same
thing
in
Africa. And nobody brings up that aspect of this whole thing with Black Wall Street.
It's the same thing in Africa. You don't own no land. You can only lease the land. That land belonged to that particular tribe. You can lease it for 50 years for you, a black person coming from the United States, going to Ghana. A Ghanaian can only have access to it for 99 years. Then you got to come back to the table. I don't care if you build a Ford Motor assembly plant on it. You can build an airport on it. ULA, when your 50 years run out, you got to come sit down at the table. If they don't want you to control that land, they're going to tell you, pack up, pick up your assembly plant, pick up your airport, and go. Or you're going to leave it there. People ain't crazy. So that's the way it was. And it was a couple other tribes, too. And I can't think of it. It was Mississippi Chickasaw. And it was one other one that the federal government came and told them to release the slave, and they told the federal government, you go to hell. If you want these slaves, you're going to pay for them. And they did. I think they got over $400,000 for the slaves that they controlled. But that wasn't unusual because when you look at in Florida and the land that Fort Moses was built on, and you had runaway property, runaway slaves go there, and English settlers came after their property, the Portuguese paid them English settlers for their property, which was slaves. It was either Portuguese or Spanish.
I'm looking at an Indian reservation.
Might have been the Spanish.
Of Oklahoma and Cree. They got several tribes out here. But the Cree reservation basically encompasses a lot of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
The Cree had chattel slavery.
Mm-hmm.
If the female was a slave, her children is a slave. They had bounty hunters, slave catchers, because if their property ran away, they went after. They had slave codes, which have been listed as being more harsher than Louisiana and Mississippi. Nobody talks about that. And you had Jesse Jackson and all them out there for this photo op.
Well, you bring up a very good point.
Claiming something that really they shouldn't be claiming all of.
Black Wall Street really could have been leased land from the Cree tribe.
And I tell you another place there's a lot of them. In your favorite town in Oklahoma. And you know which that is, don't you?
You talking about
Taft? Taft.
Oh, yeah, that's Indian territory all up in there. You go into Muskogee proper, and then Summit, Oklahoma, they got a lockdown on all that stuff. They got a casino, colleges, all that other stuff.
Now, another thing about the tribe.
You brought up a very good point, because with the Black Wall Street talks, as far as, you know, the Tulsa, Oklahoma thing, I've never heard anybody bring up, and you once you go out there, you can't ignore the tribal presence.
Well, yeah,
so
you're in their land.
In another direction.
Actually, you're in their country. It's better than their
right.
land.
Yeah,
you're in
Muskogee country. Cree. All that. They got more tribes than those two out there. But it's
you're
in Native American territory out there. So you're right. That song I want to look up, did he sounded like he probably leased that land instead of buying it.
Well, it has to be investigated. And another thing, to become an Indian, which is a member of a tribe, and some you just need to be born through the mother because of matrilineal society. But in others, you got to show a quantum physics, a quantum presence. Like the Navajo and the Choctaw, you're required to have 50% blood before they consider you as being one of them. And you've seen, for instance, like I think it was the Cherokee. I think the Cherokee might have gave in and let some of those blacks who were, you know, by blood or by being slaves who had married in some way or another. I think they let them in. Now, here's another thing, too. You're only talking about a few people. You ain't talking about all, quote-unquote, blacks. This thing about reparations, that ain't going to apply to all blacks. You know why? Because all blacks weren't slaves.
True.
Another point. If you got a pure right back to the heart, connection to one of them that landed on the shores, and they say that you got $1,000 coming. All right, suppose on the way back to that 100%, you branch off and go to Ireland or France. Say 50% of you go to Ireland or France. Well, you don't get no $1,000. It would be down to $500. Because you don't have ties 100% back there. Nobody's talking about that. All these superficials. So, you know, I don't like going to get in an argument with nobody, but the reason why come blacks don't do these things is because it don't make no sense. And, you know, I was going to talk to you something else, too. You know, the Creek are building tiny homes out there in Oklahoma for their elderly, and I've seen that.
Yep.
And I know that's something
I
like.
Didn't realize it was that because when I flew out there, first time I flew out, matter of fact, every time I come out on the way to TAF, I don't know who's behind it, but now what you said, I can guess who's behind it now.
Well, yes, but, and they raise their money. You know how they get their money? They get their money through what they got, 32 casinos in their nation.
Yeah, I've been in one of them.
That's how they raise their money. And they take that money and they do some marvelous things with it. They build homes, they build factories.
They got their own, what I would call, I define it as their own social security system. I went into...
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I went into...
They pay for your utilities.
Right. I went into one in the Muskogee proper and, you know, just to check it out and have, you know, because they got a restaurant in there too. Served me the biggest pancakes I ever had. I couldn't even eat all of that food. But, yeah, that, as a matter of fact, I had a friend of mine who's related to somebody, to one of the tribes up there in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And she just gets a check from the tribe. She doesn't work for
right.
the tribe, and she's got enough to get a townhouse and it sustain her and her family. And she's not even working for the tribe.
When the government was when that area going out west was being developed, and also those tribes was given out allotments of 160 acres. That's 440 acre.
Well, yeah,
plots, which is
exactly
actually,
that. You're
that's
right.
A square amount.
And that, like, at least 100,000 got that, to my knowledge. Well, you brought up, well, speaking about identity, you can't have a real proper conversation about what happened with Black Wall Street unless you brought out who the girlie bought that land from and then the people that were living there, how many identified as Native American and not black.
You
might have
right.
looked
just
black.
Think about this. They had oil.
But they
weren't. Had oil on the land, right?
Right. Well, yeah,
so,
yeah. Oklahoma
if
is
you and I go
what
out
we
there,
would call today black oil people, barons.
Right. If you and I was to go out there and want to drill for oil, we just ain't going to start drilling for oil. That is their land. So if you were to pull out 1,000 barrels, you don't keep all 1,000 of those barrels. You got to negotiate with those people for I can't think of the term. You got to negotiate with them for drawing oil out of their land. They going to
well,
get
I know, the little acre and a half I got out there on Taft, in Taft. That they took that off the table. I wasn't even thinking about oil or minimal rights.
The Greek gets royalty off
that was
the
written
oil.
In, and I wasn't concerned about it because I'm just concerned on the top of the ground, you know, stuff like
what
that.
What did it say about beneath the ground?
That's there.
You don't.
And it's somebody that we would if you just looked at him, you would identify this dude as black.
He's a Greek.
He's Greek. He took that right. I wasn't even thinking about it. He bought it up, took it off the table.
Here's the thing in L.A. You got black folks in this country, and I even had to use this word. They are slick as owl doo-doo, way they throw and sling this word black around. It hypnotizes some people. You got them doing lectures. You got them doing speeches. You got them doing sermons. And that's what you think and have been conditioned, hypnotized to believe. Skin color is not kin. If it was kin, why in the hell did they vote your ass out in 1979?
I can relate
and that's
to
just
Oklahoma.
One. That ain't all of them. You heard these battles that's going on with these blacks who have researched and found out that they great-great-great-great Aunt Susie was a slave with these Indians, therefore they supposed to be getting part of the gaming revenue. The natives, them Indians said, no, you ain't getting nothing unless you show where you got some blood. People ain't fools. And then, like, I hate to say this, like Beasley say, they don't even argue with you. They look at, they don't even look at you. They listen to what you're saying. And if you're talking the same stuff we hear all the time, man, they burned down our city. We was doing good, and they came, and whites did this and what. They listen to that, and they just smile. They just smile to themselves. They don't even get in your face. Stay away from you. It's the same way Africans do when they come here. Africans don't hang out with you. But guess what? They are taking advantage of those perks that was specifically for Black Americans, Native Black Americans. Why? Because Native Black Americans don't qualify. Why? Because your children are not being educated. Why? It ain't got nothing to do with white folks because they left. They left them areas. The same way blacks did after the 2014 Mike Brown mess that was there already in Ferguson, they left. And guess where they moved to? They went across the Missouri River in the St. Charles County, which is about 98% white, and got all white police departments, all the way out to Mexico, Missouri, Wentzville, where the General Motors Assembly Plant is. If they were so scared and if they were so despiteful of whites, why is it when blacks uproot to get away from blacks, they run to all white safe zones? That's the question you got to ask. They sure in the hell didn't run back towards St. Louis.
Is he finished?
Go ahead and say what you got to say, sir.
Go ahead, Beasley. He yields the floor to you, so you got
it's
the floor,
It's about damn time. Look. You know what? That's what I like about Brother Pionke. He make me look like a damn genius. You played that Malcolm X speech about self-hatred. You just heard a good damn demonstration of it. Now, look, you don't have to do any research to find out whether those people there in Tulsa was Indians or black or mixed or what the hell they were. All you got to do is just ask some of those people that lived there. They got some people that still is alive when that town was at its peak and was born there. And I never heard one of them say that they were Creek, Crow, Blackfoot, or what the hell else been discussed here. They said they were black folk. Now, who are you going to believe? You're going to believe some dude that just come along in the, what, 20th century or 21st century? Or you're going to believe the people that lived there and lived through that experience? Okay? Now, all you got to do is just go down there to Tulsa and ask some of those people that still live and say, look, are you an Indian or are you a Choctaw or what the hell y'all been discussing? And say, look, who was the people that was living in this section of town? And they'll tell you. I never heard one of them say that there was an Indian. Not near one of them. But yet and still, you got some woodhead come up there and throw out all of this stuff. The other thing, Gurley, in the history annals, they said that he bought the land. Now, if he didn't buy the land, then don't nobody own any land. The white folks don't own the other part of Tulsa. And let me give you a good one that you never probably thought of. Don't nobody own any land anyway. Don't pay your damn taxes. See what happens. See if you own it. Don't pay your property taxes. So don't nobody own no land, if that's the case. And this other thing about who's black, well, who the hell is white? You know, if you don't want to be black, ain't nobody begging you to identify yourself as black. Be what the hell you are. Some colorless person out here walking, but I tell you what, all those people that bring up that issue about, well, who the hell is black, run out there and let the police stop you, and they feel like, hey, look, you catch them on a bad day and see if they say, well, maybe he's part Indian or maybe he's Latino or whatever, what have you. Let me give you a point on that. That fellow that got stopped there in Virginia had on an army uniform. He identified himself as Latino. Why do you think they pepper sprayed his behind and treated him the way they treated him? They saw a black man. They didn't see no Hispanic. They saw a damn black man. But now, you know, my thing is this year. I think I told you years back, black and white is a social political term. You know, that's the case. All you got to do is say, well, like, look, you know, Obama got a white mother. Why come he didn't identify himself as white? And all of these multiracial children we're talking about, why come they don't go on the other side? Because this country has identified you as if you got one drop of black blood, whether that term still exists or not, you black. And the other folks on the other side don't want your ass. So now, you know, we come up with all of this bullshit, excuse expression, and all of these things that try to, you know, minimize a black claim or black progress or anything black. We try to marginalize it or either just go ahead on and try and render it meaningless. All of those black folks that ran out there to Oklahoma and those townships in Texas, hey, they did the same thing. They didn't do what the white man did. They purchased the land or either they legally got it. They didn't go out there and kill nobody and take the damn land. They dealt with the people that was there on an equal, fairly basis. And let me give you another one. All of that land during the Homestead Act that they gave those white folks, 160 acres, that was Indian territory too. So now, the thing is this. We, I guess, what, about 80,000 of us got some of it. We were still in the fields picking cotton. But nobody talks about that. We're the only people in this country. Like that lady told you yesterday, or whenever it was, she was talking about black townships.
Oh, yeah, about 2 days ago. Gladys House.
Yeah, Mrs. House. Like she told you, hey, look, just about everything in this country we built. It's our genius and our brawn that built this sucker. All you got to do the next time you go in your bathroom and take a crap, we the one invented the commodes and everything. Every time you eat something, a mouthful of something to eat, American cuisine is slave cuisine. I proved that to you a long time ago. Every time you back your car up and you put it in drive and you start off going forward, it was a black man that invented the automatic transmission and a whole lot of other stuff. But you see,
Beasley, just as a sidebar, have you been to Ahoskie, North Carolina?
Yeah, I've been there many a times. Got ran out of there sometimes.
I've never been there before. I met people that were from, no, actually three or four people. What's your take on Ahoskie?
Some of them is light, bright, damn near white, but they identify as black. I don't know what complexion those people you saw.
Well, that's what you just said, exactly what you just said. Matter of fact, if they didn't tell me different, you would swear they were white.
Can I say something, L.A., if he's done?
No, let me finish, damn it. I'll let you talk. You let me talk.
All right, go ahead, please.
The thing is, a whole lot of them look like they're white, but they identify as black. But now
they identify as black.
Yeah, well, they got to. That's what the states say they are. But now when you go there and you look like me, they'll tell you, hey, look, wait a minute, you don't belong here. But that has eased up some since the white man has been kicking their butt. But all I got to say is this year, you got people that have bought into this bullshit, and they want to be anything but who they are. And it's that kind of self-hatred that holds us back. But you know what? We got to deal with those kinds of people. Because the thing is, all that this gentleman has said this morning is nothing but self-hatred. He bringing up all of these out-of-space issues, and he know damn well he ain't got no proof to claim any of that shit. Now let him go ahead on and talk.
Okay, now let me mute. Here's Mike. No, your mic. Now, Pianki, you got...
No, you don't have to mute his mic.
His is muted.
You don't have to mute his mic. He's civilized. He don't have to cut in on people while they're talking.
Well, go ahead,
Jackie.
You got the last word.
One thing, when the government paid these groups to release their slaves, they became quote unquote freemen.
Mm-hmm.
And they could go wherever they want to. Matter of fact, they created a Freeman Bureau, which dissolved in 1906. And maybe Congress came up with something else because there were some stragglers. But a lot of them didn't want to become Americans. They didn't want to become join on to the U.S. government. They wanted to remain with the Creek. So when they went out there in Oklahoma, that was already Indian land. We always talk about it. It was a territory.
Oh, yeah, that's documented. It was Oklahoma territory.
Absolutely.
Which was not a part of the United States.
This thing about police, they got their own police force
in the
Mokovi Nation, right?
Yeah, they do.
They got their own fire department. They got their own house. They got their own hospital.
They got their own university.
So this whole stuff about if a police see you, they got their own police. Now, another thing, as in any case, ask the Germans. Any case, when you go to war against somebody because the Creek fought with the Confederates, why did they do that? Because they had a vested interest in owning slaves. Mexicans fought with the Confederates. Jews fought with the Confederates. Irish fought with the Confederates. And probably one or two other ethnic groups fought with them. Blacks fought with the Confederates. Those you like to call blacks. Africans fought with the Confederates. Why? They had a vested interest, like Mr. Stephens always talking about.
Oh, yeah, Pleasant Stephens. You know what? That's a very good point. I had a couple of black Confederates on about 4 years ago. I got to track them down and bring them back on because you're touching on points that a lot of people don't realize. Because a lot of these
as far as trans,
had a vested
these as far as these black inventions, a lot of that stuff is bogus. They had automatic transmissions in cars way before Ford even started making his cars here in the United States. And when C.R. Patterson made his Jennings, they had manual shift transmissions. They didn't have no automatic transmissions. That bunch of ignorance. That's what I say. People exaggerate things, and they make it sound good. So people come out to the lectures and hear this. I don't know why. And they believe this stuff. And then they go against their own cliche that when you want to hide something, put it in a book. You don't have to listen to these people doing these speeches and these lectures. Just go read. The information is out there. That is, if you can read, because when you look at these high school academic performance, these kids today ain't reading. So you know what that means? The same mentality that you have today is going to be projected into the future. You can't read. Where are you going if you can't read? I mean, as simple as that. But anyway.
Well, on that note, Tiaki, you
thank you very much, Ellie.
Thank you all for listening. Everyone have a good and safe weekend.